I don't know if I'm explaining exactly, brother, but you can express it yourself. So I'm glad to turn the service over now to Brother Raylu to tell us about their experiences with the brethren in Australia.
Thank you, Brother Nick. We might begin by giving our love and greetings of the brethren in Jersey City, with whom we're privileged to be meeting. And their greetings to you is found in the 9th chapter of 2 Corinthians and the 8th verse. And God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that ye always having all sufficiency in all things may abound to every good work. I also bring the greetings of Sister Mary Sannix. She was hoping of being here with us today, but she called this morning and she just did not feel up to it, but she wants you to know that her thoughts and her prayers are with us. I often think of St. Paul. Remember when he concluded his first missionary journey, he returned back to the home ecclesia, and that was at Antioch. And at Antioch, he gave them a message as to how the brethren were doing in Cyprus and in the northern area of what is now known as Turkey, and gave them a full report as to conditions amongst the Gentiles. And as a result of that report, he kind of was opening up the whole harvest of the Jewish age to the Gentiles now, which was at that point a rather revolutionary idea. After he reported to them, it is recorded in the 15th chapter of the book of Acts, and some days after, Paul said to Barnabas, "Let us go again and visit our brethren in every city where we have preached the word of the Lord and see how they do." And ever since that statement, brethren throughout the gospel age have been motivated to go to every city where we have preached the word of the Lord and see how they do. We are concerned about the welfare of our brethren. We're all a part of the brotherhood of Christ, all members of the same body. We're all part of this great high calling. And so we are so eager to know how one another is doing and how we might understand and help and assist and guide one another. And as one prospers, we all prosper. As another may despair or another may be in affliction, we all can empathize, sympathize, and bear their burdens. And so Paul and Silas went forth, and they, in his second missionary tour, came to a wonderful little town of Philippi. And there they established a little ecclesia. An ecclesia that he looked back with or to for the rest of his earthly life with joy, with such love, with such sensitivity, because there he found an island of faith, and he found a fellowship, he found a bonding that he had not experienced in some of his other contacts with the churches. So much so that he counted this little ecclesia at Philippi as an island of faith. And he said, "For my God is my record, how greatly I long after you all in the bowels of Jesus Christ. I thank my God upon every remembrance of you." So close was the affinity and the attachment that he was just united with them in heart, as well as a mission, because of his contact with them at Philippi. I am just citing Paul's experience with the church at Philippi and drawing a little parallel, perhaps, with our experience that we had, Carmela and myself, for 3.5 weeks with the brethren in Australia and then in New Zealand. Because there we also found, as did Paul at Philippi, island of faith and of love and of a bonding and a sense of oneness that was just so transporting and truly identified as of the Spirit and of the love of Christ. And in that spirit, I will say that it was just as though we had been at home with brethren whom we have known all our lives and with whom we have been for many years. You know, when we are in the fellowship of the body of Christ, there should be such an openness, such a oneness, such an acceptance of one another, that we have no barriers, that there is neither black or white or bond or free or Jew or Gentile or male or female. We are all one in Christ. And no matter where we should go, if the Spirit of the Lord is there, that will be conveyed and that will be our experience. And so, as we were privileged to go to Australia, we'd met our brethren on one of our trips, and they talked to us about coming to Australia. We were very interested to know where our brethren were. We had been to Nigeria, we had been to Poland, we had been to Israel, we'd been to India, and we were concerned about, well, now, in a faraway place, how are the brethren doing there? And so when they had a convention at the year end, we were invited to appear there and to speak. We were only too eager and happy to go. And as we went, I say it was just as though we were at home and as though we really belonged. Perhaps before we talk about our actual experience, we might give a little background as to the continent of Australia itself and some of the historical development of the truth in Australia. I say we felt like we were very much at home because there was no cultural clash. It was not like going to a place like Nigeria, where you go from an advanced civilization such as ours and go into a back primitive one where there are not even the essentials of ordinary living, where there are not sewers, where there is not often running waters, where the utilities don't work, where there is no transit system, where everything seems to be broken down and the surroundings very primitive. There is a big difference, a big gulf between the living experience in two societies. But coming to Australia, one comes to a highly developed, highly technical society, not one whit behind our level. We seem to feel that in America we are so in advance of the rest of the world that we're always at the cutting edge of things. But brethren, there are many parts of the world where it is so much more, shall I say, favorable in terms of lifestyle, in terms of surroundings, than it might very well be in this very favored nation of America. True, America has been blessed in many ways. America has been blessed because here the gospel message, the harvest message went forth. And it was here where it most favorably was received. And our blessing has been much because of that. But other parts of the world have been able to catch up to America in many ways and surpass us. And I will say for a lifestyle and for a quality of life, we were much impressed by what we saw in Australia. Australia has a history somewhat like America, in the sense that it was a newfound area. America was founded politically in the latter part of the 18th century, when the American Revolution occurred. Here democracy was founded. You know, in about the same time, around 1760, 1770, Captain Cook circumvented the entire continent of Australia. And there he claimed it for England. There had been other countries that had found it or had known of the land. Portuguese were there, the French were there also, but it was the English who really claimed it and wanted to colonize it. And in the 1786, I believe it was, they established in Australia, in what is now known as Sydney, they established a penal colony. They saw Australia not so much as a place for development, but rather as a place to get rid of their social problems, because the jails in England were filling up. The poor laws that they were having. In other words, if you were poor in those days and you could not pay your debts, just as it was in the biblical days, you were thrown into jail and kept there. Or if you were a criminal, you had stolen something, you were consigned to imprisonment for a long time. And so their prisons were crowded. And so to exile and to deport all of their problems, they thought they could take all of their lower elements and bring them over to this place on the other half of the world so that they will not be a problem to the English society. And this is what they did. They established Australia as a penal colony. And thereafter, for the next 60 years, over 100,000 people were brought into that land to settle it. And out of that came this modern society. Now, with the prisoners, not only were they criminals in the sense of having committed a crime, but many of them were just paupers. And they brought with them in that land a skill and a determination to start life again with a value system that was genuine. And thus, out of that little beginning, there is now a nation of 17 million who are advanced in their culture and who have a similar outlook and a similar constitution as we have in our country alone. And so when I say we went to that land, it was not a cultural shock. It was like coming to our homeland as we have here. But brethren, when we think of the development of the truth, we also find a parallel track in both areas. As the truth was formed here, or formulated here in America by that wise and faithful servant, Brother Russell, and in his efforts to spread it to other parts of the world, it was first to England and then to the Commonwealth country, that he did, Brother Russell, did want to establish a office in Australia, because there it was a kernel of interest. And so he had sent over from England his representative of the society, a Brother Hennings. And Brother Hennings, I believe, came into Australia somewhere around the 1906, 1907. And when he came to Australia, he was organizing the operation and the dissemination of the truth in that area. But in 1909, you remember that there was a great, shall I say, division amongst the truth movement, when Brother Russell began to get clearer understanding on the of the covenants and of the doctrines of what is involved in the sin offering. And as he got clearer understanding and began to teach what he believed was a better scriptural position, there was some opposition amongst the brethren. And one of the opponents was this Brother Hennings. He opposed Brother Russell and Brother Russell's new teaching on the covenants. Brother Hennings believed that the church was under the new covenant, that the new covenant was made with spiritual Israel. Brother Russell saw that the new covenant must be made with Judah. The new covenant must be made with Israel. The new covenant must be a new covenant, not like the covenant that they had in Moses at the Mount, but rather now a covenant of grace. And this covenant would be of in Israel, made with Israel, and it would be made at a time in which there were blessings to be poured upon the world through the operations of that covenant. And so it was made with Israel in order to bless the nations of the earth, because the seed of Abraham would be as the sands of the seashore, the natural seed, and the stars of heaven, the spiritual seed. The Gospel Age Church, the spiritual, and the Millennial Age, the natural. And thus there was this division. And so Brother Hennings withdrew from the society, and then a Brother Nicholson was his replacement. And after Brother Nicholson had passed away, I believe somewhere in the 20s, a Brother Martin, M-A-R-T-E-N, took his place. And for 60 years, that brother had been helping the brethren and assisting them to keep in the truths that had been imparted through the work of our wise and faithful servant, Brother Russell. And during that time, there were many opportunities, or many temptations, I should say, for the brethren to go into all different bypasses and all different shades of understanding that was promulgated after Brother Russell's death. The society made inroads in Australia, but not amongst the brethren, because there was a core of truth that they were holding to. And so, isolated as they were still maintaining themselves. Until today, they are now about 110 brethren throughout all of Australia. Australia is the size almost of continental America. Almost 3,000 miles from east to west, and some 1,200 miles from north to south. In all that vast region, only 110 or thereabout brethren, spreading about 7 or 8 different cities mainly, and some peppered in a few of the isolated areas, each striving to hold on to what they know is to be present truth. And in that condition, they are widespread, and they are not too many meeting in any one place. And so they really are eager for fellowship. We don't realize, dear brethren, what it is to be isolated, to know what it is to be just a few, just a little cluster, to have just maybe 6 or 7, or at the most maybe 30, at the very most, ever meeting together. Where brethren are just singly in the outposts, in the outback regions, and they are just trying to hold on to their faith, and in their prayer, and in their study life, and in their Christian walk, they are endeavoring to hold up the truth and to live the Christian life. We've been so blessed, dear brethren. I hope we will never get to the point where we take each other for granted, where we take fellowship, where we take the union of the body and the group reinforcement under each other. I hope you'll never get to the point of just taking it for granted and just feeling that this is ordinary, because, brethren, we don't realize how favored we are when we can meet in clusters of ecclesias and where we can meet together like this. And so the brethren in Australia are very active, very thirsty for fellowship. They are eager to want to know what's going on in the rest of the Bible student world. They are asking questions, just like we do, similar questions about conditions in the world, about basic doctrines, about problems of how do you resolve certain issues, or how do we react in the demands of life. What are the Christian positions as it comes to our facing the various questions and changing demands of our day in which we are living? And they know, sometimes do not have anyone to test their thinking against. You know the blessings of group fellowship. When you have an idea, when you have a thought, when you have a belief, and you can just come to others and ask, how do they understand this scripture? What is their belief? What is their understanding of my understanding of this text? And to be able to get their ideas and to test your thinking, and to get a deeper understanding and probing into the question, to broaden your outlook. It is a resource It is a blessing that we sometimes don't appreciate, and when we don't have it, though, we know the value of it. And I think that is really the way our brethren in Australia are at this day, and why they are so welcoming contact from any source from the outside community. We were glad that Brother and Sister Brown were at the convention as we were, and that we had met them along the way, because their fellowship and their contact is so meaningful. As for Carmela and myself, we were invited to be the guests of a precious, a dear family. We were invited to come to Melbourne. Melbourne is at the bottom, the southeastern part of the continent. And really, in Australia, 90% of the population live along the seacoast, maybe a band of land about maybe 100 or 200 miles of depth, and they live along the eastern seacoast from up towards the point of Cairns, down around the southern part, and around to the western part, which is around by Perth. And there were sprinkled these big cities, big by their terms, not so large by ours. And these big cities contain some 70 or 80% of the population. And so all that vast hinterland is sparsely settled, and much of it is desert and occupied by Aborigines in their more primitive culture. And so we were invited to go to the southern part of Australia, the southeastern portion, the city of Melbourne, a thriving metropolis, 600,000 population, and lacking nothing in modern facilities. We were met at the airport, and from the very moment we got there, we knew that we belonged. We knew that this was like home, because meeting us there were six brethren, bearing flowers as they do in Poland and as they do in India, giving the token of their love and of their anticipation and eagerness for you, and your welcoming, feeling very much at home. And there were, of course, the two brethren that I had met earlier and knew well. Dear Brother and Sister Zurich, dear Ted and Anya, you know who they are, why they are the parents of our dear Yvonne here. And I tell you, as we know the dearness and the loveliness of that sister Yvonne, you can understand the source from which she came. These two dear brethren were such a delight to us at every step of the way. And we can't begin to say how much we appreciated the warmth, the openness, the hospitality. We were so much at home, we felt as though they were like our brothers and sisters of long standing, and we knew them and could discuss any question with them, any point, and we did from morning until night. You know, brethren, you don't get that kind of fellowship too often, where you do feel that there is an openness and a oneness in the kindred of mind and spirits. We felt that way. And in that consecrated home, we were for, about 7 or 8 days. And it was really a grand experience. When you can really wake up in the morning and begin with the Lord, and throughout the day, stay with the Lord, and at the very end of 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, talk about the Lord and all together in oneness, you do really get the feeling of, this is where I belong. And so that was the kind of quality of fellowship that we were privileged to have in that blessed home. And what we found in other homes was a similar spirit of acceptance. When we got there, we were glad to get one day where we did not have too much activity outside from the home, because the trip to Australia is a rather lengthy one. We came from New York on Christmas Day and went to Los Angeles, and because of plane connections, we had to spend 2 days in L.A., and we spent them in a lovely time in fellowship with the brethren there. Then there is a 18-hour flight, 15-hour flight
to Auckland, New Zealand, and then we stopped there for discharging of passengers, another three-hour flight into Melbourne. And there, when we got to Melbourne, we had this warm reception, and the next day we just got acquainted with one another. The next day was New Year's Eve, and there was a watch night service, and we were asked to serve on that, and they had hymn singing, and Australia has a charming, lovely little group of upcoming Bible students. These youngsters ranging from maybe 2 years on to maybe 8 or 10 years, they are the most lovely, charming, and well-behaved youngsters that you could ever want to meet. And there they were giving a little song service at the memorial, at the New Year's service. And, you know, for about 10 or more minutes, they were just giving song after song, and little as they were remembering those songs. And they had a prompter card, but still they were singing the songs of gusto. It was so refreshing to see that. And there was other discourses in the course of that watch night service. The next day, the convention proper started. And those convention was served by various brethren from some of the classes in New Zealand. That is the general convention. I suppose it's the counterpart to the convention that we have in the Midwest. And brethren from Adelaide, from Canberra, from Nambour, Brisbane, and Sydney were at that convention. The subjects that were discussed, there was the anastasis, a question on what it means to be raised up, a question on the presence of the Lord, questions on the subject of the sin offering, subject on the talking about the signs of the times in which we live. Another subject was Antichrist. Another subject, and then there was sprinkled in with that was general admonitions and discourses about character development and upbuilding and of service. It was a general spread of the truth spectrum. The second day, there was no convention because there was a marriage. Brother and sister, I don't know just where they were from. I think they were from Brisbane and one from Melbourne, were married, and so the brethren attended that service, and the convention was suspended for that day, and third and fourth day were the remaining conventions over through the weekend. The next, and that was our first week when we put it all together. The next week was, again, in fellowship with the brethren, Wednesday night meeting, we had a discourse, and on Thursday we had a meeting. On the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, there was an unusual event that they have. I think it's an annual affair, where the brethren, as a family, because you know that time of the year in Australia is just the reverse from up north. That is the southern hemisphere, and their summers are our winters. And so they were in the month of, we would think of as June, while we have it January or July here up north. And so that is their holiday season, their vacation season. The schools are closed and factories often are on furlough. And so the brethren meet together as families and they rent out a hall at a resort, usually around near a beach area, and they would meet there as families for a kind of gathering each day for Bible study, both for the children as well as for the adults. And in those studies, they would raise all kinds of questions and issues together in a very informal, but yet very and relaxing atmosphere, but yet very serious atmosphere as well. And so we were privileged to lead studies there on both days, Friday and the Saturday, in which they discussed, want to know why I believed in the present truth, and why I believe that this plan of the ages and the understanding that we have through the harvest message is biblically based. The next day, and that was all afternoon and part of the morning as well. The next day we also carried on that same similar discussion, but only related it to inter-family and inter-brethren relationships. And we realized that they, in their society, had many problems just as we have in ours. As a matter of fact, the American experience has been exported throughout the world, and our problems that we see here are slowly beginning to permeate all the other societies as well, as they become more industrialized and as they become more up to our standards. But you know, one of the most blessed experiences of all, though, and one of the happiest reasons for going, was to be able to see some of the brethren and to meet two or three of them whom we had known in the past. When we were in Poland in, say, I think it was 1982 or 1983, there was a young brother there, oh, he must have been about 17 or so, contemplating consecration, thinking about the army that he's going to have to join, because in Poland at that time, there was conscription and you had to join the army. And I remember talking to Brother Eric at that time, because we were at his guests at his parents' home for two days at Czarnów, which is outside of Krakow. And as we were guests there, we talked together about what it meant to be consecrated, and his concern about going into the army, because he didn't want to do so. I knew that he was torn as to what he should be doing. Well, we had learned from other sources since then that he had left Poland and that he had gone to Australia. We hadn't heard nothing more about the brother. There's another brother whom you know here, Andre. Andre, let's see if I can remember his last name, Vistok. Remember, he was here, and Andre was really a man without a country. He left Poland because he did not want to go into the service. And he came to America, and here he was hoping to get a green card. But he had learned that his parents were going to be at one of the international conventions, and he went to the international conventions to meet them there. And then he learned that he could not come back to America. Now, I remember meeting him at that convention. And there he was. He didn't know where he was going to go. He couldn't go back to Poland. He couldn't come into America. He couldn't stay in France at Poitiers where he was. And what would happen next? I remember commiserating with him and also praying with him as to where the Lord might lead. Well, I knew eventually he'd gotten to Australia. Can you imagine now what it was for me to come now to Australia and there in Melbourne to put my arms around Brother Eric and to hold closely to Andre and to recall with them both what it was like back a decade ago? Because now they were in Melbourne. Eric is working with optics, Andre is working with the computers, both doing very well, both have a lovely home, and both have three little children. Or does Andre only have two children? Three. Both have three darling little children. You just couldn't help but just be drawn to them. And just to look back and see how they are thriving. They are deacons in the church, and how they are eager to serve, and how they show the love and the Lord's Spirit. I tell you, brethren, it means so much to go back and to see that, to see how God leads and guides his people, the young people who are starting out in life and who are often bewildered about what the future may hold, but if one but commits their lives to Him, and if one but trusts Him and holds fast to their principles of love and righteousness and truth, God will never leave them nor forsake them. He will see them through. And it's just a blessing to see how those little youngsters are growing up in the pattern of their parents. And so, it was so good to meet new brethren. Oh, there was Brother Lester. What a dear brother. He was a brother that I could feel just like with Brother Ted. As though you knew him all your life and you just embraced him without any inhibitions. And there was Brother Ted, who told us a young man, being employed next to a concentration camp. He was in Poland. I've forgotten the name. It wasn't Auschwitz, but it's another notorious prison camp where he was employed in a foundry which was adjacent to this concentration camp. And he told in detail how the Nazis were killing the Jews. He knew what it means to see and to smell the incinerators and the burning flesh. For years he had experienced that. He knew the horrors that was going on in the concentration camp. And he knew that the ovens were there. And he said, if anybody ever says that there's no such thing as a Holocaust, he said, that is a demonic lie. And he told about some of the conditions that he saw. He was working next to the camp. And often, he said, three times he was spared. The Lord spared his life. And he told of how, at the very end, when the Nazis knew that the war was lost and that the Americans were coming near to liberate the camp, and how the Nazis wanted to eliminate and to erase all traces and evidence of all the crimes that were being committed in that death camp. And he was at the point of a gun told to join in and to bury the evidence, the corpses as well as whatever else there was. And how he knew that if, when he finished that task, that the last bullet in that Nazi's gun would be for him, because he would also want to die as one who knew about the evidence and dead men tell no tales. And he knew of that. But he said he was able to slip away, elude the guard, and wait for the next day in which the army came and rescued the inmates of the prison camp. And he told of two other experiences where the bombings came over. They didn't hit the prison camp, but they hit the installation, the foundry where he was working. And how the Lord had spared him. And it was an experience to hear that you begin to know what it means to go through these conditions, which we can only imagine. But one who has lived through them and yet has come out with such a buoyant and healthy way enables you to know that the Lord's grace, and the Lord's grace alone, could have preserved such a one. And oh, what it means to be having this kind of interaction and fellowship with these dear ones. I tell you, friends, these are the experiences that makes life, Christian life, so worthwhile. And then, well, I might say this, that in Australia, there is a mixed condition. And let me say this, and I hope I'm not being misunderstood, that because of the origins, as we mentioned, Brother Hennings, and his insistence upon that the division of the truth between Brother Russell and now and Brother Hennings, it has left its mark in the nation of Australia. Because the concept of the New Covenant, it has lived on. And although Brother Martin, in his ministry to the brethren, has upheld the truth, and he died in 86 or thereabouts, about in the mid, I understand, in the mid part of the 80s, there has been a residual feeling amongst the brethren and a division amongst the brethren about that doctrine. And as they meet together, there is a tendency towards these feelings to rise. And so what they have had to do, they've had to kind of come to a understanding that as they meet, they're not going to discuss certain subjects. And one of them is not to discuss the church. Is it under the new covenant or under the old covenant? In some fellowships, they do not discuss the presence of the Lord. Other fellowships, they do not discuss such matters as the church's share in sin offering. Because there are these differences. And the brethren say that we are so few that we want to meet together even though we don't agree on these matters. And so they come to a accommodation and they say we'll not talk about them, and so they will talk about everything else except that. Now, brethren, you know, if that continues for any length of time, what does happen? Now you just lose the sense of present truth. Because the things that make truth present are no longer on the table for consideration or to be talked. You no longer teach the volumes. You no longer read the message which has been the fountainhead of our present truth. You no longer study them because there is a vision and there is a difference of opinion. And I will say, now this is not true of all classes. The class that we attended, and Melbourne is, I think, a beautiful place in every way, because there are two classes there. There's the Polish class, where we were attending, and that is the largest class. I will guess somewhere around 25 consecrated brethren. And there's the English-speaking class. And there's much interaction between the two. English-speaking have about 10 brethren. And they are sound and solid in the present truth. And they discuss the present truth. They may not study as much the volumes as we would. And I hoped I had impressed them with the need to do that. The need to get a good grounding in the truth so that they know where and what they believe. But there is a willingness to talk a wide range of subjects, and they do believe the truth, as you and I do. Other classes are not so fortunate. I see our time is running. But I believe Brother Martin, and I never met the brother, but everyone who met him has spoken so highly of his ministry and of his level of spirituality that I am sure that he is one of the outstanding lights, and he must really be a true saint. But Brother Martin, and this was told me by another brother who is such a fine brother of the English class, and I was drawn to him also immediately, Brother Simon. And I know, and Yvonne, he especially wants to send his love to you. And he says how they miss you, and they all do back home. And, oh, Brother Simon, did you know, Brother Luke, I think the Lord preserved the truth in America, in Australia, because Brother Martin did say, we should make sure that we keep the volumes and that we keep separate, because if we don't, the message of those volumes will not be transmitted from one to another. It will not be given from one generation to the other. The young people coming into such a fellowship will not be exposed, and the truth will thus be lost because there will be no one willing to discuss these matters. And so the classes that followed his advice and who kept that purity are the classes that I say are rejoicing in present truth. From Melbourne, we then went north. We were supposed to go to Sydney, and then from Sydney to Brisbane, and to meet with Namur brethren, and go to Maroochydore. But the brethren from Sydney were all at the convention. And so we bypassed Sydney and went right up to Maroochydore and met with brother and sister Toff.
Tosh.
And again, what a beautiful time we had. We were there for 4 days. And again, we felt like we belonged. And I can't take the time to describe where we were, the beautiful setting. And I will say, brethren, oh, I must say this, that one thing about Australia and around Melbourne and around Maroochydore where we were, literally, it's almost like, I think like, but perhaps what the Garden of Eden may have been like. In a sense, that we had every kind of fruit, and fruit just off the tree, in its full ripeness and deliciousness, as you can imagine. Lychees, we learned about lychees, mangoes, peaches, avocados, apricots, bananas, grapes, pears, pepinos, apples, berries, cherries, papaya. These were just on the trees all around us. And brethren went out, and Sister Tosh would go out and just pick them off from the trees and bring them in, and there we would eat them right at the lunch table. And the cherries and the blueberries and the blackberries, dear brethren, why, they were something that we never see in this country. Luscious in every way. And little wonder that some of the brethren there are vegetarians. Because they realize all the nourishment and all the wealth and the deliciousness of the fruit of the vine. And that's what it will be like in the kingdom. Now that will be the diet of mankind, and that will be such a delicious spread of menu that they will want nothing more. Well, we spent 4 beautiful days with the Toshes. And the next day, the second day, we went to meet the brethren in Brisbane. And there was a combined meeting between the Nambour brethren and the Brisbane brethren, and we spoke there. And there the fellowship is very, shall I say, the fellowship is one of difference of opinion. In the congregation is one brother who believes in the eternal salvation, that nobody will be lost, that even Satan will be saved. Others do believe that the new covenant is present. Others do not believe in the presence. And others who believe in the present truth. And that certainly is brother and sister Tosh. They believe firmly in the present truth. Yet they meet together. Because they say we have no one else to meet with. There are all just a few of us here. Just about 7 or 8 or 6 or 7. So rather than just be isolated, we've got to meet together. When they meet, there is not that kind of interaction. There is not that kind of discussion upon the whole counsel of God. Rather, there are areas where are so much sacrosanct, and we will not discuss them. But the love is there. They feel the unity of a oneness, of a reinforcement, and they do appreciate each other's fellowship, knowing that they are so few and they're so different from the world about them. And so that is the level of their fellowship. At the Toshes, we were also privileged to meet with a former Jehovah's Witness. And she comes to their home for a weekly Bible discussion. And we were there with her for 5 hours. And that was a refreshing experience. That even though they are in the midst of, you know, pretty much isolation, they are able to let their light shine and to let others know about the Lord's message and about the kingdom. And Brother Tosh is a very deep student, and he writes beautiful papers, and he has a paper of about 20 pages on the new covenant being future and a beautiful exposition of it. But not many people read it, not many pay attention, but he is firm and he is grasping, always probing into the Word of God. And it was a real intellectual and spiritual challenge to be with him and with Linda, his wife. Well, so much we can say, but I say our time is gone. We came back to Melbourne. There had 2 precious more days, our last 2 days. And I tell you, I can't begin to tell you about some of the things we did, though, in those days. We, and some of the animals and some of the plants and some of the flora and flora. I mean, it's so different, and it makes you, when you see a kangaroo and when you see a platypus and a kaola and an echidna and a Tasmanian devil and a wombat and a dingo, these are all animals which are found nowhere else in the world. They were just, as it were, developed in that land, isolated from everywhere else. And to really compare them and the various vegetation, that's a whole hour's talk of itself. But that last 2 days were just days of fellowship, coming to brethren's homes, and each brother was trying and being more hospitable, and it just overwhelmed us by the warmth of their love and greeting. And we just went from one home to the next. And then the last day, we might say the Last Supper. And I will tell you that Sister Zurich, Anya, is one of the best cooks. And I tell you, she spent a whole day, and she is a very, very active and a very vital person, and always getting things going and always in motion and always doing things. And she put together what must have been a 10-course meal, just one goodies after another, just coming before the plates. And they had a house full, some, I guess, 14 brethren, that's all the table could accommodate, who were there. And oh, what a nice, sweet, rich fellowship we had. And it was just, you know, a tearful occasion. I wish we could say more, but we don't have time. Then, next day, there was again a farewell. And 14 brethren came to the airport, and we felt like celebrities. We really felt as though we were honored guests. And as we left, we just said goodbye to the brethren, and with tears in our eyes. We went from there then to New Zealand. And New Zealand is a country some maybe 1,500 miles to the east. And New Zealand has a population of only 3.5 or 4 million people. New Zealand is composed of two islands stretching roughly 1,200 or 1,300 miles from north to south, from the North Island to the South Island, and some maybe 80 or 90 miles wide on the average. And in all of New Zealand, there are only 4 brethren in all that territory. 3 of them are concentrated in the city of Auckland, which is the largest city in New Zealand, on the North Island. And we were there because we were told that these isolated brethren, you know, are in need of fellowship and contact with the outside. And we were glad to go there, because we made contact with Brother and Sister Heim. And she is some 92 years old, and he is some 88 years old. But yet, they are both rejoicing in the Lord. Sister has had some difficulties with her memory. Age is creeping up. Thought processes aren't as consistent. Brother is finding his knees giving out, and they don't know how long they'll be able to maintain their little lovely little house. Soon they might be going to a nursing home. But you know, to spend 5 hours with them and to be able to talk with them about their hopes, to give them a little inspiration, perhaps a little encouragement, talk about the promises that await. And there was with them, too, a Sister Swoboda, a dear sister who, striving to serve the Lord and with a good perception of present truth. And she is a very great encouragement to them, and she looks after their affairs. She cooks for them. She brings them meals, supplements what is being brought in. And those three are just trying to keep a little glow of faith and hope and encouragement one to another. And they meet quite frequently together. So it was a help to us and a strength to be able to just, for those 5 hours, just to give them a word of comfort. You know, that's what Paul did. You know, Paul would go from place to place. And he would sprinkle, you know, his words of truth and of message of hope and of love and of teachings wherever he could. And there he would just leave a little seed. Just plant a seed and trust the Lord to fertilize and to water and to sprout. And thus it is, your pilgrims, you know, you had that beautiful hymn, what is the vow song? Daily will I remember those, my precious Lord, those who volunteer to scatter golden gems like morning dew. And you know, we heard too that there was a sister down in Christ Church. That's on the Southern Island. We checked our train schedules and we checked the bus schedules. It would take probably a day to get there and another day to get back, and we could not do that in terms of our connections. And we couldn't fly because of the, well, it was quite expensive, and here was just this 8-year-old sister. So we did the next best thing. We decided to call them, call her. And on the phone, we had this, well, I'd say lengthy but intimate conversation together. And there, by herself, she just was talking about how the Lord had blessed her and kept her and sustained her through the years, and how she was just trying to hold on. I wondered why she couldn't have come to the convention. She said she's caring for another elderly person. The two of them are sharing facilities together. But she said she would welcome anybody who could come at any time because she needs the kind of spiritual uplift and a sense of identification with those of like precious faith. And so, all we came back, and it was a blessed trip. I mean, there's so much more. You know, your heart and your mind just fills up. Because you're going there not just to give a talk at a convention and then leave, because that's what we often do as pilgrims, but to stay there and to really live with the brethren and to share their living experience. That is true fellowship. And so we enjoyed very greatly our trip. Australia, I believe, should have an important part in your prayers, because there are brethren there who really love the Lord and who love you and who ask that every point be remembered to every class that we would come to. And really, if you ever have the opportunity, be sure to visit your brethren. But if you can't visit them in person, but certainly visit them in prayer. And any encouragement that you might give along the way, how important it is to them. We just thank our God that we were privileged to have that happy memory. Just as Paul did with the Church of Philippi and wrote to them, I thank my God about every remembrance of you. So we can thank our God on every remembrance of Australia.
Well, thank you, Brother Ray. That was quite a comprehensive recounting of Brother Ray and Sister Khan's visit with the brethren in Australia. He told us many interesting things, including he's whetted our appetite, telling us about the various kinds of fruits and foods that are down there, and in the 10 course meal that he had with the brethren. So I'm sure that your appetite has been stimulated so that you can enjoy the meal downstairs later. And when you close, Brother Ray, ask the Lord's blessing not only upon what you conveyed to us about the brethren there, but also upon our fellowship and on the meal to follow. There are numerous details which appeal to me in Brother Ray's recounting of all that took place down there. the country's history originally, and then the history of the truth movement and the difficulties encountered when there was a split and how it was reestablished, and the reference to the volumes that Brother mentioned, and which reminded me of the way we have used our volumes, and you will.